weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity, but understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world.
I'm your host, Steve Nesbitt, head of the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Multiple tornado and thunderstorm warnings alerted Illinois residents on Monday, April 27th. A line of storms traveled 55 miles per hour through central Illinois with heavy rain, strong winds, and thunderstorms, and we even had multiple thunderstorm and tornado warnings here in east central Illinois. The intense winds left thousands without power Tuesday morning in parts of Chicago and northwest Indiana. Multiple severe weather reports were scattered across the area, and wind gusts took down several power lines and trees in the Champaign-Urbana area.
The highest risk for damaging severe storms, including a few tornadoes, will be focused along Interstate 70 from St. Louis to Effingham on Monday evening. But severe impacts are also possible along the I-72 corridor from Springfield to Champaign to Danville, especially between 5 to 11 p.m. Cooler and quieter weather follows for the rest of the week.
That was Andrew Pritchard, a meteorologist for Nutrien Ag Solutions. Andrew joins us today to talk about why Champaign is such an active area for severe weather and what the rest of spring will look like for Illinois. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks so much for having me.
So can you tell us why Champaign has been such an active area for severe weather warnings this year?
Yeah, we found ourselves kind of right at ground zero for a very active storm track this spring. It kind of seems to be that every spring is going to be a little bit different in where that storm track is going to set up, who's going to be the very busy region throughout that early part of the spring. And this year, it's been kind of from Texas up to the Great Lakes. And we here in central Illinois, we're right in the middle of that. So as these areas of low pressure have traveled across the country, drawing more warm, humid air north from the Gulf and kicking off these big storms, we've kind of just been right in line to get hit by these, a couple each week, it seems like.
Yeah, and it seems like this is not an abnormal situation the last couple of years. I think this is the third year in a row, actually, that Illinois has led the nation in tornado reports, and I think we're right there this year.
There is a wall of severe thunderstorm warnings capable of producing 70-mile-per-hour winds and also tornadoes crossing the Mississippi River right now. On their current heading eastbound, it would move into our western counties around 8 o'clock.
And so now we have another tornado warning here until 2 o'clock from Madison County. And so that's our most recent update. Let's get back to that because I know it's going to draw up another line here. And like I mentioned, it's for
you can see the funnel cloud spinning there, and we are told there is damage in Lena, so we'll keep an eye on this for sure and keep an eye on this storm.
I'm sure people in Illinois are starting to get weary of the sound of that tornado siren.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of the storm track and the way that it's been pointed has kind of wobbled a little bit the last couple of years. But each year, it seems like we've just been in this early run, especially in March and April the last few years with a lot of severe weather. And then that at times has continued on into the summer.
So you've been observing the weather, obviously, very closely these past few days. What led to the multiple tornado warnings that we saw here in Champaign-Urbana?
So on Monday, April 27th, we had a big, powerful upper-level storm system coming from the Central Plains into the Midwest, and that brought a lot of wind shear along with it. We also had several days of strong southerly flow bringing in moisture from the Gulf off to our south. So we had that perfect combination of warm, humid air at the surface and then very strong jet stream winds to help kind of organize these storms and bring them to severe levels and in some cases help them to rotate. And so we saw a line of storms develop on Sunday night, and that moved through the area Monday morning, prompting severe thunderstorm and tornado warnings. And then the atmosphere kind of reloaded during the afternoon, and we saw the cold front kick off another line of storms during the afternoon and evening, which again tapped into that wind shear, produced a lot of straight line winds, and in some cases, it looks like at least a couple of tornadoes.
Yeah, it seemed like that first wave, you know, woke up in the morning, it was relatively cool, but then the instability was kind of shoved up ahead of that cyclone and was coming in pretty quickly. Things warmed up pretty fast. And then that second line, it was interesting, the orientation of it sort of put us in the warning area for quite a while.
Yeah, it's interesting when you can sometimes get these fast-moving storms and you see an area that's, you know, got a bunch of tornado warnings and it almost looks like it's just pointed at you. And I had that feeling, you know, midday Monday, seeing those storms developing and in the early afternoon. And I was like, it's just pointed right at Champaign-Urbana. So, You know, there were some questions about how unstable we would get, but sometimes when you just have a highly sheared storm system, it doesn't take that much. And so, as you mentioned, sometimes we can just get just enough drawn ahead of the line of storms there for them to tap into and create a lot of problems as they quickly move across the area.
Yeah, and I saw a lot of pictures of really cool low clouds, some of the urban lighting reflecting off the clouds with that second line. It was really a nice picturesque event for a lot of folks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of high population areas impacted by some of these storms, and so you can get some very cool imagery with everyone's got a cool camera in their pocket these days.
Yeah, so a lot of the storms had a lot of heavy rainfall. I mean, obviously, I had over 2.5 inches at my house. I think there were a lot of reports over 2 inches. But a lot of the circulations, because of that heavy rainfall, were what we call rain-wrapped. Can you talk a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, so these rain-wrapped tornadoes, they can be especially dangerous because you can't see it. And so sometimes we as humans, our nature is to want to wait for some sort of confirmation of that threat that's looming before we seek shelter or take some sort of action. And so it can be really dangerous. Some people are looking out the window and it just looks like a wall of rain coming towards you. And so there are a couple ways that this happens, and what we were seeing Monday was kind of this line of storms producing a lot of widespread wind damage, but kind of kicking up these little circulations along the leading edge. And so right on that leading edge of the storms, you've got all the heavy rain, some cases some hail there, the strong winds, and you just get a little circulation there, but it's going to wrap all of that rain on the leading edge of the storm around itself there. So completely obscured, all you would see is kind of just this wall of rain coming at you, and you'd get with some strong winds, and then in some cases, very strong winds, moving in a circular motion with that little spin-up tornado. And that's enough to knock down power lines, bring down some trees, and create some minor structural damage. So it wasn't necessarily these big rain-wrapped supercellular tornadoes we can sometimes see, which are a different beast in themselves. But either way, these rain-wrapped tornadoes, these obscured tornadoes, and in some cases rain-wrapped in after dark tornadoes can be very dangerous because we can't spot them and we have to just rely on radar to kind of tell us what's going on there, or in a worst case, kind of reacting to damage reports that come out due to these tornadoes that were not spotted.
Yeah, so you mentioned supercells, right? This is sort of your classical thing that storm chasers look for out on the plains, these things that present on radar with an obvious hook echo with this, very distinct signature that is a classical signature that we look for. In terms of these storms that came in through the second line, it was this line of storms, and we call this a quasi-linear convective system, where basically you're just looking on radar and it looks like this monster storm that's, 100 plus miles long. Sometimes it's got really high reflectivity that's indicating the rainfall that's coming out of it. But then you don't really see a lot of the obvious signatures on radar before. Can you talk a little bit about how you as a meteorologist look at those kind of storms and what you look at for the danger signs?
Yeah, you're right. And talking about those big supercells, we kind of dodged a little bit of a bullet on Monday because some of the forecasts here before we picked up on that morning line of storms coming through looked like we would have a ton of instability across central Illinois with this highly sheared storm system. And when that happens, you can get those big isolated supercells that kind of develop out in what we call the open warm sector, kind of just out on their own, doing their own thing. And that's when we can get these kind of longer lived, very significant and damaging storms. But we had the morning line of storms come through, and because of that, we had a little bit less instability during the afternoon. And so the big powerful storm system, that cold front, was still able to force the air upward and generate some big storms right along that front. But it did so in that linear fashion there, where we had kind of just the uninterrupted line of storms basically from Chicago down to St. Louis during the late afternoon and evening. So you're looking at a big area of storms. The whole thing is producing, strong straight line winds, maybe 50 to 60 miles per hour. But what you're looking for as a meteorologist who's monitoring the situation is some of these very bright areas of velocity on the Doppler radar, which is where we can see the direction and the speed at which, raindrops and hailstones and other particles in the clouds there are moving. And so sometimes you can see this bright area of velocity and maybe kind of a little, these are not very technical terms, but a little notch or a kink in the line there. And what you're seeing is kind of that stronger area of winds maybe working towards spinning up a bit of a circulation. So there's a lot of things going on there, but you get kind of this early sign where you're seeing some brighter velocity and maybe a convergent area where you're getting kind of stronger winds going one direction and then starting to get some of those winds coming into the storm, and an area of inflow is what we would call that. But without getting too technical, you're just kind of monitoring those bright spots on the velocity with the Doppler radar and looking for some of those early signs that we may spin up a circulation there and get a bit of a tornado. So that's what we're looking for, and that's what we kind of know. Maybe we've got a tornado there, but at the very least, those bright velocities there, that's a signature we've got some strong winds. And so we're talking about the potential in there for some, you know, significant wind damage there.
So if you're just joining us, this is Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Steve Nesbitt, head of the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. We're talking about the tornado warnings and the severe weather that alerted Champaign residents this week with Andrew Pritchard, a meteorologist for Nutrien Ag Solutions. Yeah, so what were some of the biggest hazards that we did see on Monday and some of the damage reports?
Well, we've talked a lot about wind, hail, and tornadoes, but the lightning has been exceptional. And I mean, it was that way Monday, and it has really seemed to be that way across the Midwest with a lot of these events over the last few weeks. But a lot of cloud-to-ground lightning, which can obviously pose a hazard if you're of the curious nature and you're standing outside watching these storms. But it looks like a lot of wind damage across our corner of the Midwest here, across central and southern Illinois. Numerous reports of 70 to 80 mile per hour wind gusts. That was enough to bring down some power lines and create some tree damage and some minor structural damage. We did see some hail and around surrounding parts of the Midwest, much larger hail. Springfield, Missouri, parts of southern Missouri saw 2-plus inch hail fall yesterday. And then same thing down across parts of North Texas, across the Dallas-Fort Worth metro. But bringing it back to, Illinois in our corner of the Midwest, it was mostly wind damage. Yeah, there was a few of these tornadoes and then also pockets of flash flooding. We had repeated rounds of these big storms. And, you know, we talked a lot about drought over the last year, and we speculated that it's often the case that drought doesn't like to go out quietly. And that's what we've seen in some parts of central and southern Illinois as well. I spent a lot of time driving around, the Effingham area and Vandalia in particular along the Interstate 70 corridor, and looks like a lot of sudden new lakefront property for farmers across the area as they're trying to get ready for field work. It looks like it's going to be a pretty challenging next couple of weeks. Thankfully, some dry weather on the horizon, but really brought all of it. Big winds, some hail, some tornadoes, a lot of flash flooding, and a lot of lightning.
So in terms of forecasting, we were noticing that the Storm Prediction Center elevated their risk up to a level 4 out of 5 for western Illinois and near St. Louis. We were kind of still in the level 3 out of 5 in the morning. Did that forecast sort of bear out based on what was observed? And what were some of the challenges in forecasting this event maybe a couple days out?
Yeah, there was a couple. There were good things and there were challenging things about this forecast. And one of the good things was this was a very big, obvious upper-level storm system within the jet stream. And so that's where those early forecasts came out, where we're able to track this upper-level wave. We've got these new, machine learning and AI forecasts, too, that can help us kind of look back at past patterns. And everything was kind of flashing red across the Midwest with this storm system coming in, saying, hey, this has all the hallmarks of a big storm system that could produce an extensive outbreak of severe weather. The challenge, though, is this was a system where as we got closer and you start to see more of the details, you're starting to realize that, yes, you've got an environment that's going to be supportive of organized severe thunderstorms. But now we've got this morning line of thunderstorms that's going to come right across the target area, the warm sector, and it's going to maybe overturn things. And so suddenly, the night before, it's a wake up and see sort of forecast situation where I know I'm going to go to bed and wake up to a multi-state area that is at risk for a potentially significant severe weather outbreak, but I don't know exactly where the boundary that's going to, separate the rain-cooled air from the warmer, hotter, muggier, untouched air off to the south, and where some of these really crucial boundaries that can enhance the potential for significant tornadoes are going to set up. So big, obvious storm system that allowed us to, set the stage and start, alerting people to potential problems, but it's also challenging when you can't really say exactly where those problems are going to be, even 12 hours before the event happens.
Yeah, a lot of this comes down to a couple of things, right? One, you've got the atmosphere is just chaotic. You've got these things that we that happen on scales that we can't observe. And then, of course, our models are getting higher and higher resolution. They get better and better, but they have uncertainties in them. And even if you start out with perfect initial conditions, you're just going to get an incorrect forecast. And so the forecasters have to sort of blend the answers that they have and their own physical intuition and sort of run all that through when they're right making a forecast, right?
Yeah, it's really great to have these very high-resolution weather models, but of course, they're never going to agree perfectly with each other. None of them is going to have the story exactly right. And so you have to step back a little bit from those models and say, well, this run of this model looks terrible for Champaign-Urbana, but this one looks terrible for Bloomington. And this one looks like it's just going to, you know, hit St. Louis with something hard around 6 p.m. and just look at the picture here and understand, you know, how things might evolve, the, you know, clues you're getting here for storm mode and, you know, is there a pattern or a trend starting to emerge? But, you know, sometimes there can almost be too much of this high resolution data, but it's all just part of the story. And as a meteorologist, you've just got to kind of use your past experience, look at the environment overall and not get hung up on anything, you know, hour to hour. And I even found that a challenge myself as a meteorologist. You know, I spent days leading up to this kind of beating the drum of, hey, it's a big storm system with a lot of wind shear and, you know, it's not going to take much instability to give us a really, you know, long afternoon or evening across central Illinois. Well, we get that morning line of storms that comes through and that kind of flipped my thinking a little bit so that mid-afternoon, I'm like, well, we're probably pretty stable. It doesn't look like we've really recovered. So I think our risk is going to be much lower here with this round two. And that was not necessarily the case. We dealt with another big line of storms covered in tornado warnings, a lot of wind damage, and potentially some of these brief spin-ups.
So does this event bring back any memories of past events where we've had sort of, you know, these lines of storms that produce these sorts of spin-ups?
Well, it seems like it's been the theme this spring. I mean, it's starting to feel a bit like deja vu where every week we have these fast moving lines of storms. But it feels like almost like a summer like pattern to me. And I know that this is not uncommon in the spring to get these big storm systems that kick off big squall lines. But kind of the intensity of these lines of storms, the significance of the winds, the tornadoes, and I mentioned the lightning here has felt very summer like here. So it kind of gets me thinking to the summertime where we get these big MCS, these big clusters of storms that can produce widespread high impacts. And that's kind of been the theme here the last few weeks. And what's been exhausting as both a meteorologist probably and just someone in the general public here is it seems like these events we've had the last few weeks are not, oh, a troublesome storm here or there. It's this big line of storms that's going to march across the entire, you know, central Illinois area, and every county is going to have severe weather reports here. So it's been about the most, I guess, rapid and intense start to a severe weather season I can really remember here over the last 20 or 30 years. Certainly reminds me kind of 2006. We had a lot of March and April severe weather, and it quieted down after that. But every year is a little bit different, and it's kind of hard to say where this one's headed, but it does bring back some familiar feelings.
So looking out in the forecast here, what are things looking like in the next few days?
Well, luckily, we have a bit of a break. We brought a lot of cool air into the Midwest here, so it's pretty chilly out there just compared to some of the warm, muggy days we've seen over the last couple of weeks. But we've got this cooler, quieter period here as we go through the transition from April into May. There's a lot of longer range forecasts that look like they may turn stormy again at some point, but we have at least a brief window right now to enjoy some cooler and quieter weather.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Weather Realness, the weekly podcast about weather and climate. Today, we're talking about recent severe weather in the Champaign area with Andrew Pritchard, meteorologist with Nutrien Ag Solutions. So let's talk about safety. I know I was actually out of town on Monday, but was getting a lot of texts from friends about, you know, what do we do? You know, people are getting a little bit of warning fatigue and you know, I think people are finished with this, but they want to know what to do. So if you get a tornado warning like we did, especially at night, what should people do?
Yeah, it's tough to resist the urge to confirm that or to kind of wonder, is this really the big one? And so you want to stay locked in on that response there. The tornado warning is issued for your area. You want to seek shelter. And if you're at home or at work, that's going to be an interior room away from windows and exterior walls. And the idea there is you got, whether it's a tornado or, you know, in some cases, some of these really significant straight line winds with blowing debris, falling trees. You want to just put as many walls between yourself and those objects as you can. So you want to get, you know, to a basement or an interior room, like a bathroom or something like that. Sometimes folks are out on the road here, and you know, you want to, if you're driving and you get a tornado warning, want to make sure that you, if you have enough time, pull off at the next exit, you know, find a truck stop or a rest area that you can use as a shelter there and just take a little bit of a break from your travels there. And we've seen a lot of this severe weather coming through at night. So really pushing the idea that you should have a NOAA weather radio that you can program for your home area here, making sure that if you have a smartphone, that wireless emergency alerts are activated there. You can even back it up with, you know, the FEMA app or some of these other alerts, alerting apps that'll send you a text or a phone call if something's issued for your area. But just staying locked in here and knowing that, you know, it may not be the last time that we're dealing with this here as we go through the spring.
So let's say you're driving up to Chicago or something and you receive a tornado warning alert on I-57. What should you do?
Yeah, well, and this brings up a good topic, and I just want to take a minute just to say that, you know, when you're traveling, it's always a great idea just to check on the weather conditions expected across your route, because a lot of these days that we talk about severe weather, people will ask me, you know, should I drive from here to Chicago? And the question's always, it's a, you know, risk assessment there. Can you move the trip? That's always the first thing I would recommend. So knowing what you're going to be driving through is always important, so that if you get that tornado warning, hopefully it's something that you already knew was in the forecast, so you've got a bit of a plan there. But you're going down I-57, you know, there's no shortage of truck stops there. If you get that tornado warning, if it looks like you got some time, you got clear conditions out ahead of you, and it still looks like it's safe to drive, I definitely recommend finding the next exit and just, you know, pulling up to a truck stop or something like that and just having that available as a shelter there. Have some companions around you there. You can maybe check in on what's going on with the storm and look at the radar on your phone. But if you don't have that time, just pull over to the shoulder. I mean, if you go into a very low visibility situation with heavy rain, high winds, it's not going to be safe to drive, both because you can't see the road, you can't see potential flying debris or debris in the road. We hear all the time about people who, you know, maybe run into something, power lines or a tree that's been blown down or a piece of building debris that's laying across the road and they didn't see it because it was raining so heavily, but they were still traveling. So best thing you can do is come to a stop. And the best place to come to a stop is going to be off the road somewhere safely, you know, off an exit. But if you can't do that, just pull as far off onto the shoulder as you can, hit those four ways, and just let the bad weather pass.
Yeah, and one thing I was told, even this past storm, that they were driving on I-72 and they saw people converging under an overpass.
That's a great thing to bring up to not do. I know it maybe feels like the right thing. If you're going to be driving into hail, you want to get underneath something, but the overpass is not the safe place to do that. You're going to be backing up traffic or potentially blocking it as other people try to do the same thing there. So it's not a safe place to be, and it is made worse if we do get some significant winds, especially if those are associated with a tornado. There's been plenty of evidence that shows the physics of that, you know, strong winds coming through that tightened space underneath the overpass can accelerate those winds, and people have been blown out from the overpass there, and you know, that's certainly not a safe place to be.
And let's say you're driving and you actually see a tornado, what should you do? Should you floor
right?
it?
Well, you gotta take a minute there and think about what you should do. And so if it's not directly on top of you, take a minute, stop, look at that tornado, and line it up with an object on the horizon. If it's a couple miles away and there are some trees there, look at that tornado and how it's moving in relation to the object on the horizon. And if it's, you know, quickly moving from left to right or from right to left, it means that tornado is moving the other direction, and you may be able to just stay right there and let the tornado move away. Now, if you're looking at the tornado, you have it lined up with the tree and it's not moving at all left or right, the tornado is just getting bigger in size, that's probably a sign the tornado is actually coming right at you. And that's when you can make that decision. Well, I've got the open highway to my south. It looks like if I just, you know, start driving now, I could maybe get out of the path of this thing. So, you know, you got to want to just take a minute, breathe and assess your situation before you panic and do something rash, because it may be that your situation allows you to drive away and get to safety. But if you're in that situation where, again, it's coming at you or the tornado is very much right on top of you, you want to avoid trying to drive away or race that tornado and maybe get out and get into a ditch and somewhere safely.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, absolute worst case scenario that hopefully is so unlikely that you never would ever experience this. But let's say you're in your car and you're like, uh-oh. You mentioned heading to a ditch. Why is that safe?
Yeah, and again, I sometimes do a lot of talking before I get to that point because it is the last case. I mean, you've maybe missed some signs and now we're in a really bad situation and the tornado is on you. And so you don't want to stay in the vehicle. The car can easily be tossed by the strong winds in that tornado. And you're essentially then looking at being in a really awful car wreck as you're tossed around with that, you know, vehicle. So getting out and getting into a low-lying area kind of puts you a little bit, you know, kind of below the horizon and may give you some protection there from flying debris and being pelted by some of the smaller objects being blown around there. Obviously, this does not sound like an ideal place to be, and it is not. It's not going to be a fun ride, but it at least gets you a little bit below kind of the main trajectory of some of this debris and gives you a little bit of some safety. The kind of the bigger the ditch, the better. But of course, you're kind of maybe thinking about floodwaters and that kind of thing, too. So it really gets complicated when you're in a tornado. And I had a colleague and friend who used to say kind of jokingly, but not jokingly, the safest place to be in a tornado is not in the tornado. So we want to avoid that situation.
Yeah, this is obviously, I get a lot of questions about this, but it's so unlikely. But people are curious about
it. Yeah, check the travel forecast before you hit the road. You know, be monitoring. If you check the forecast and severe weather is in the forecast, then you're going to be monitoring the radar, you know, keeping an ear on the local radio and hopefully avoiding the situation where the tornado is suddenly on you.
So we've been talking with Andrew Pritchard, meteorologist of Nutrient Ag Solutions. Thanks for joining us, Andrew.
Happy to be here, but sorry that it takes bad weather to bring me in.
Have a weather or climate question you want us to answer? Leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu. Coming up next, weather and climate is primarily reported in English in the United States. So how is the weather communicated to non-English speakers in our country? Answers are coming up on Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois.